The next morning, we walked into town and wandered without any particular destination in mind, just taking in the sights. The city center was smaller than I'd expected, with much of the colonial architecture still intact. Row after row of worn, whitewashed stucco from the days when Nairobi was little more than an outpost to service British railway construction. Alongside these buildings, another city emerged, a city of high-rise offices and elegant shops, hotels with lobbies that seemed barely distinguishable from their counterparts in Singapore or Atlanta. It was an intoxicating, elusive mixture, a contrast that seemed to repeat itself wherever we went, in front of the Mercedes-Benz dealership, where a train of Maasai women passed by on the way to market, their heads shaven clean, their slender bodies wrapped in red shukas, their earlobes elongated and ringed with bright beads, or at the entrance of an open-air mosque, where we watched a group of bank officers carefully remove their wingtip shoes and bathe their feet before joining farmers and ditch diggers in afternoon prayer. It was as if Nairobi's history refused to settle in orderly layers, as if what was then and what was now fell in constant noisy collision. That evening we drove east to Keriako, a sprawling apartment complex surrounded by dirt lots. The moon had dropped behind thick clouds, and light drizzle had begun to fall. At the top of three flights, Alma pushed against a door that was slightly ajar.
Betty, you finally come!
A short, stocky woman with a cheerful brown face gave me a tight squeeze around the waist. Behind her were 15 or so people, all of them smiling and waving like a crowd at a parade. The short woman looked up at me and frowned.
You don't remember me, do you? I'm your Aunt Jane. It's me that called you when your father died.
She smiled and took me by the hand.
Come, you must meet everybody here. Zaituni you have already met.
This, she said, leading me to a handsome older woman in a green patterned dress. This is my sister Kazia. She's mother to Alma and to Roy Obama. Kazia took my hand and said my name together with a few words of Swahili. She says her other son has finally come home, Jane said. My son, Kazia repeated in English, nodding and pulling me into a hug. My son has come home. We continued around the room, shaking hands with aunts, cousins, nephews, and nieces. Everyone greeted me with cheerful curiosity but very little awkwardness, as if meeting a relative for the first time was an everyday occurrence. I brought a bag of chocolates for the children, and they gathered around me with polite stares as the adults tried to explain who I was. I noticed a young man, 16 or 17, standing against the wall with a watchful expression. That's one of your brothers, Alma said to me. Bernard. I went over to the young man and we shook hands, studying each other's faces. I found myself at a loss for words, but managed to ask him how he had been.
Fine, I guess, he answered softly, which brought a round of laughter from everyone.
After the introductions were over, Jane pushed me towards a small table set with bowls of goat curry, fried fish, collards, and rice. As we ate, people asked me about everyone back in Hawaii, and I tried to describe my life in Chicago and my work as an organizer. They nodded politely but seemed a bit puzzled, so I mentioned that I'd be studying law at Harvard in the fall.
Ah, this is good, Betty, Jane said as she sucked on a bone from the curry. Your father studied at this school, Harvard. You will make us all proud just like him. You see, Bernard, you must study hard like your brother.
Bernard thinks he's going to be a football star, Zaituni said.
I turned to Bernard. Is that right, Bernard?
No, he said, uncomfortable that he had attracted attention. I used to play, that's all.
Well, maybe we can play sometime.
He shook his head.
I like to play basketball now, he said earnestly. Like Magic Johnson.
The meal smothered some of the initial excitement, and the children turned to a large black-and-white TV that was showing the munificence of the president. The president opens a school. The president denounces foreign journalists and various communist elements. The president encourages the nation to follow the path of Nyayo, footsteps towards progress. I went with Alma to see the rest of the apartment, which consisted of two bedrooms, both jammed from one end to the other with old mattresses.
How many people live here? I asked.
I'm not sure right now, Alma said. It always changes. Jane doesn't know how to say no to anybody, so any relative who moves to the city or loses a job ends up here. Sometimes they stay a long time, or they leave their children here. The old man and my mum left Bernard here a lot. Jane practically raised him.
Can she afford it?
Not really. She has a job as a telephone operator, which doesn't pay so much. She doesn't complain, though. She can't have her own children, so she looks after others.
We returned to the living room, and I sank down into an old sofa. In the kitchen, Zaituni directed the younger women in cleaning the dishes. A few of the children were now arguing about the chocolate I'd brought. I let my eyes wander over the scene, the well-worn furniture,
the 2-year-old calendar, the fading photographs, the blue ceramic cherubs that sat on linen doilies. It was just like the projects in Chicago, I realized. The same chain of mothers and daughters and children, the same noise of gossip and TV, the perpetual motion of cooking and cleaning and nursing hurts large and small, the same absence of men. We said our goodbyes around 10, promising to visit each and every relative in turn. As we walked to the door, Jane pulled us aside and lowered her voice. "You need to take Betty to see your Aunt Sarah," she whispered to Alma, and then to me. "Sarah is your father's older sister, the firstborn. She wants to see you very badly." "Of course," I said. "But why wasn't she here tonight? Does she live far away?" Jane looked at Alma, and some unspoken thought passed between them. "Come on, Barak," Alma said finally. "I'll explain it to you in the car."